content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month I will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. My guests today are Larry Bernstein and James Milton Weeks, Jr. Let me tell you a little something about Larry. Larry Bernstein worked for IBM for 23 years. After leaving IBM, he returned to school in 1996 and earned a master's degree in social work. He worked as a substance abuse counselor with inpatient services at the North Carolina State Alcohol and Drug Abuse Treatment Center for 2 years. As a licensed clinical social worker, he has served as therapist with dual-diagnosed clients for more than 12 years at the Wake County Department of Human Services. In addition, he was a bereavement counselor with Transitions Life Care, formerly known as Hospice of Wake County. In 1998, he began a private practice at Holly Springs Counseling Center, where he currently affects individual clients, couples, and families. He is an instructor for Dialectic Behavior Therapy, DBT, a type of cognitive behavioral therapy, and he conducts life skills and loss and grief classes at the counseling center. He has been a volunteer parenting course instructor with Safe Child for over 20 years. Larry, affectionately known as Bernie, is the executive director of Triangle Survivors of Suicide, an organization that supports people during the aftermath of a suicide. He began it 27 years ago on May 5, 1992, following the suicide death of his son, Michael William Bernstein, who was age 20. On December 12, 2019, he celebrated 27 wonderful years with his precious wife, Nancy Smith. Larry loves to read and is an eternal student. He is passionate about suicide awareness and prevention and hopes to start a community nonprofit in 2020 with a focus on making a difference. Next, let me tell you about James Milton Weeks. James Milton Weeks, Jr. was born in London, England, and raised in Monrovia, Liberia. James's extensive timeline of academic accomplishments begins in 1983, when he was an instructor of physics at the University of Liberia until 1986. From 1991 to 2004, he was an associate professor of physics at the Abraham Baldwin Agricultural College in Tifton, Georgia. In 2004 to the present, he has been an instructor at Durham Technical Community College. In 2013, he also became an adjunct instructor at Wake Technical Community College. James was the recipient of a National Science Foundation grant, and he won an award for teaching excellence. He lost his daughter Ariel and son Jared to suicide in 2011 and 2013, respectively. James participates with the Triangle Survivors of Suicide Support Group. Along with Larry, known to many as Bernie, he organized the first survivor's walk 6 months after the death of his son. His varied interests include music, piano, chorale, opera, contemporary. He does weightlifting, travels, biking, and scuba diving. In addition, in 2009, he organized and directs the University of Liberia Alumni Chorus in the USA. James is single and quite handsome, I may add. So, gentlemen, welcome. I am delighted to have you on today's edition of Community Connections. The topic we are going to discuss is a difficult and sensitive one and may affect our listeners. It is also a necessary conversation, especially because of its emotional impact. Death and dying from a prolonged illness are terribly sad, but when a loved one dies of suicide, it must be a horrific shock. So, Larry, let's begin with you, and if you would, please talk a little about the circumstances of 27 years ago and how you came to organize Survivors of Suicide.
Hello, Sonia. Thanks for inviting us to talk. In May 1992, my 20-year-old son Michael died by suicide, and my life changed that moment I learned about his death. After the funeral, a good friend pointed me to a survivor support group. Triangle Survivors of Suicide met once a month. Most groups meet once a month. The group facilitators had run the group for 2 years and were looking for someone to take over. So I figured that I needed to be there, and I volunteered to take on the job. So immediately, I changed the meetings to weekly and have worked on improving the format. As I slowly got through my grief, I was supported by others who struggled to do the same. And now, 27 years after my son's death, I'm still making sure the group keeps going, along with other survivors who have trained and also facilitate the group. As far as I know, we're only one of a handful of groups in the country that meets weekly.
So from a clinical point of view, since you have a master's in social work and you are a therapist, what are some facts about suicide that the general public may not be aware of?
Well, first, there's statistics, which to me are very shocking. According to the World Health Organization, 800,000 people die by suicide each year. In the United States, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death. According to the latest statistics, over 47,000 people die by suicide. That's 130 people every day, almost 6 people every hour. It's estimated that over 250,000 people become survivors every year. These survivors are left to deal with the aftermath of suicide. Their grief is traumatic and more intense than other losses. Secondly, everybody needs to be involved to make this problem get better and the numbers come down. People need to be prepared to help people who are struggling and suicidal. They have to be open and talk about this issue so that we can reduce the shame and stigma that might prevent somebody from getting help.
Thank you for that information. It is staggering, the numbers. Surprising, too. Well, so James, would you please relate the setting of your personal story? I can't imagine the sorrow of your double loss.
Well, Sonia, I lost my only daughter, the youngest of my 4 children, on September 22, 2011. She was 22 years old at the time, to suicide. Her death came after 7 years of dealing with mental illness and only 2 weeks after she was discharged from a psychiatric institution. 20 months later, I lost my 30-year-old son, Jared, to suicide, and he was found on May 6, 2013 by his eldest brother. It was a horrible time, especially after my daughter. I felt completely lost. And 3 weeks after her death, I found the Triangle Survivors of Suicide. And when I heard Bernie's voice, it was relieving. He said sorry and immediately told me he had lost his son. And deep in my sorrow, I tried to believe that there could be some hope. I participate with the Triangle Survivor Suicide group 8 years down the road, and I continue to participate and plan to participate for as long as I can. And people often ask why. The survivor of a suicide, that journey is a lifelong journey. And looking at Bernie always gives me hope. I'm 8 years down the line. He's 27. There are many roads, many hurdles to climb. And if he can do it, and he's trying to do it, it gives me hope.
Thank you so much for sharing something so personal. It must be just a horror that lives inside of you. But when you said you heard Bernie speak to you and tell you right away that he also lost a son, you found a partnership.
I did.
Yes. Okay, so I have a signature three-part question, which I'm going to offer to both of you. You touched a little bit on it, Bernie, but you have an opportunity now to expand a little bit. So why would someone take their own life? That why, accompanied by the triplets' guilt, shame, and blame, it would seem, lie foremost in the minds of parents. So would you both address those issues and perhaps speculate maybe about warning signs, if there are any? Either one of you can speak first.
Making sense of what happened consumed me when Michael died by suicide. I often say for many people, the first months and year is kind of like just a lot of detective work trying to understand what happened. But after many years, I now accept that I'll never have answers to most of these questions. And that's not easy to get to that point. But it took many, many years. As far as warning signs, I have to say that a sudden change in habits or mood or appearance, anything that seems out of the ordinary, or watching them give away possessions, possible low energy or motivation. And then I'd offer you to read up on the standard signs of depression, because most of those have possible clues to what might be going on. And don't be afraid of asking, are you having thoughts of hurting yourself or dying? I think we've all had moments in our lives of despair, and lots of times we're not encouraged to ask for help or seek help. It's said or implied that there's maybe a weakness, especially with men, and we have to get over that. We have to be able to deal with these issues just like we would a broken leg.
I'll just interject that I did hear a story of someone who gave away all their possessions, used up all their money, and then was saved. And when he was saved, he had nothing. He had to start from scratch because he thought he wasn't going to be here and have any need for money or other possessions. So that is a clue. Okay, James, please.
To address the question of why, I still struggle with that why. And her name will be mentioned later, but a book I read with Iris Bolton gave me the insight to ask why and to be satisfied with the answer that I probably will never know. In the case of my daughter, she had been hospitalized, so the why is a little bit easier to grapple with. In the case of my son, it seemed to come out of the clear blue sky. As Bernie mentioned, those are some signs, but in the case of my son, I had already lost a child by suicide, and there were no signs that I could see as he was dealing with whatever he was dealing with. It was only after his death that, talking with the minister at my church, that I realized that those actions were signs. So sometimes the signs can be very difficult to judge, and I found this afterward. In those cases, sometimes it's better to have some close person to the individual, other than like a parent or a sibling, because they may be able to see behavior that might be suspect better than one who is up close and personal, where that behavior has become sort of their way of life.
Had the clergy noticed anything?
Talking with my clergy, my particular clergy had some mental health issues. And as they relate their story to me, then I could see the behavior in my son.
And what about the issue of shame, blame, and guilt?
And for me personally, I was fortunate not to struggle with the emotion of blame. The emotion of feeling stigma was an issue for me, but more so the two that I struggled with, especially after my son, mainly was anger. That is sometimes survivors of suicide. The strongest emotion is anger, and it's anger at the person that took their life. My daughter was the first to go. I felt absolutely no anger. I was completely depressed. When we found my son, the emotion that lingered the longest was anger. So,
well, thank you for sharing that. Tell me if I'm right about this, but isn't anger and depression sort of cousins, Bernie?
Well, depression is kind of a unique thing because it's composed of several things. I mean, depression can be a great deal of sadness. You've seen the list of symptoms and signs, low energy. So anger can be part of that too. It's listed as one of the things that are part of that. I think when you talked about a little bit about blame, I think in struggling to come up with an answer, especially as a parent, you often think one of my jobs is to keep the world safe for my children. And when something like this happens, you can't question. You have to question whether you did as much as you could have if you had picked up on things. I think longer term, though, their quietness, their inability to ask for help, they're not talking about their struggles and their despair is what I think eventually takes them to maybe complete an act of suicide, which if we had known about it, you try to do everything you can in your power to for the safety of your children.
Right.
Could I interject there?
Absolutely.
Piggybacking on what Bernie just said, in the case of my daughter, she had been hospitalized in psychiatric institutions 6 weeks, for continuous 6 weeks, and 2 weeks after her discharge, she took her life. So in the case of my daughter, we were actively trying to prevent a suicide. I do recall when I had her hospitalized, I actually wrote on the sheriff's paper that we were afraid that she would take her life. So we had done everything. And the day that she took her life, her mother said when she was driving off, for the first time, her mother felt funny. There was just something funny about this. And those are the signs that I was talking about earlier, that you, the active person involved in that person's life, will not give in to, but somebody else might push you to. So her mother told me that morning when she left, I felt something different, but I just quickly put it out of my mind.
Oh, there are no words to express that feeling mothers have, maybe fathers too, but you just have a knowing of forbearance of something going wrong. Okay, so you did, James, tell me a little bit about how you became acquainted with Larry and that you were propelled to join forces with him because of how open he was with you. So if you want to add anything about that, but tell me a little bit about the walk. What does it do for you?
Okay. a little bit of history. So the walk started in Raleigh, the particular walk involved with Triangle Survivors of Suicide. The first was held in November of 2013. I had done my first suicide walk in 6 months earlier that year. And what that walk did for me was to meet, for lack of a better word, a community of parents who had lost their children. And it brought moments of healing. It brought moments of relief. It helped increase my understanding. It also put me in touch with many college area kids in Washington, D.C. area who were struggling with suicidal ideations. And in that, for that weekend, I could see the benefits of a walk, helping as young people deal with suicidal ideations and the support for people who have lost loved ones to suicide. So that particular year, the usual walk in Raleigh wasn't going to be held. So I spoke to Bernie about it. He looked at me like I was crazy. He said, but let's do it. And then we did, thank God.
Yeah, that's how things really get done. And you've been doing it for many, many years. So do you want to add anything to the overview of Survivors of Suicide? How it helps people after the math, and maybe some of the things that the organization has accomplished?
Well, the group is about support, and no one can understand this type of loss except other survivors. It's about having a place to talk about suicide and how you're doing. You know, outside of that room, suicide is kind of a conversation stopper. Other survivors can understand the struggle and the journey. Talking with other survivors, learning how to deal with this unique grief, can get you through this painful loss. Triangle Survivors of Suicide is partnering with other organizations and promotes suicide awareness and prevention. The walk takes place on the second Sunday in November in downtown Raleigh at Halifax Mall. Every registration, donation, and sponsorship fee is donated to local community organizations that are working to save lives through suicide prevention and awareness programs. Our 2019 walk raised over $28,000, raising our 7-year total to $92,000. Past donations have gone to Hopeline, which deals with saving people in trouble every day by providing them some help and resources. Another recipient is the North Carolina Counseling Center, which has been able to add a full-time suicide prevention coordinator with these additional funds.
Thank you. Sounds like you guys are really doing a great job. Do you get some publicity for it? Does WRAL come put you on the air?
This last year, we had some wonderful publicity with several of the news programs, including Spectrum, WRAL, and that CBS channel. I'm not sure what we call that one. But, yeah, they all came out, and they all provided some publicity before and after.
Oh, that's good. You need the publicity for it because of that shame, blame feeling that more people know about it, the easier it could possibly be to start the healing. I know it's not easy. So I would like to talk a little bit about a book. The author is Iris Bolton, and the title of her book is Voices of Healing and Hope. So the book is about a conversation on grief after suicide. After grieving her own loss, and you can't write this if you didn't suffer this personally, the author sets forth her philosophy, and I'm quoting, "I believe that God gives man free will to be or do whatever he chooses in life. Whether the outcomes are positive or negative, we have the opportunity to learn from them or not." So, with that quote in mind, could you please share with us and our audience what you have gleaned personally and how you actually are able to help others while struggling yourself.
What I've learned, especially from Iris Bolton, is that helped me early, is in the case of my daughter especially, she was ill. And sometimes illnesses can be cured, and sometimes they can't, and death may be the end, although by suicide, there's stigma involved. Also in her book, she says, life can still be good, and I've held onto that like gold. I'm able to help others just by having, by still standing. I have had one participant say to me, they lost a child by suicide, and they lost their other child, natural causes. And when they lost their second child, the husband and wife told me, they said, now what would James do? So just by standing, even though I feel weak, you never know the impact you have on other people who have experienced similar losses. Exactly what Bernie did for me.
I just want to ask you about your son. You've had a third child. What was the impact on your son?
The first suicide, I had three surviving sons. That brought them together. When I lost the next child, that was split. It caused anger. It caused... They're just trying to walk again, even though they're 40 and 35 years old. So the impact of the son's suicide was severe on the children.
I'm so sorry to hear that. And Bernie, do you have other children that you might comment on?
Yes, I do. I think the one thing that's true about this particular life-changing situation is it provides a legacy and changes everybody's life, of all survivors who are affected by their loss. And my other two children definitely talk about Michael's death and how it's affected them through the years, some of it negatively. You know, it's a legacy that you have to watch carefully. And of course, as a parent, my sensitivity to not only my children but other people in my life has increased greatly. If Michael was capable of doing what he did, then other people that I know are capable of doing that same thing. And
okay, contact information. Just give us your phone number, and then how would somebody contact you?
Okay, I'll keep it real short. They really should get more information at our website, www.trianglesos.org. And my email address and phone number is on the website, and they're welcome to contact me directly.
So these two gentlemen are quite the dynamic duo, and I thank you both for sharing your personal stories and being such gracious guests. Thank you for spending this last half hour with me and Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn. See you next time on the radio.